Hello again, you're listening to the News at One. So from midnight tomorrow, Wednesday the 21st of October, the entire country will go to level 5 COVID-19 restrictions. The recommendation of the National Public Health Emergency Team, first issued 2 weeks ago, was agreed to by the government last night, with ministers meeting again this morning to put in place a series of measures designed to ensure compliance with the restrictions and protections for those hardest hit by the lockdown. There's one modification already. The number of people who can attend a funeral has been increased from 10 to 25. We'll have more on that cabinet meeting presently. But first, let's talk this lunchtime to the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, who chairs NPHET and on whose recommendation the government has acted. A very good afternoon to you, Dr. Houlihan, and thank you for joining us on the News at One.
Good afternoon to you too, Brian. You're very welcome.
So we're heading now into this six-week-long level 5 lockdown on NPHET's recommendation. We know it'll put tens of thousands of people out of work. It'll threaten the viability of many businesses across the country, leave people fearful, isolated. It has huge consequences. And I suppose what people want to know is, to what end? What would be the measure of success in containing the virus as a result of these restrictions?
What we have to do now, Brian, as a country, is protect the health of people in the first instance. That's the primary objective of this. We have to protect some of the things that we've identified as a country as being most important to us. We want to protect, obviously, the school system and the childcare system. We want to protect our health service for those people who need it most for reasons other than COVID. Really good work has been done by the HSE to re-establish so many of the services that had to be stopped across our health services, including in hospitals, in the early part of this year. And we absolutely want to protect the health and well-being of people who are vulnerable to infection and to the adverse outcomes in particular of this disease. And the level of infection we have in the population at the moment is a risk to all of those things. And we simply have to take action as a society. The government has made the decision it's made to accept our recommendation of the level 5 restrictions from the government plan for a period of 6 weeks. And what now has to happen, Brian, is that each one of us as individuals in society has to behave in a manner that helps to drive the level of infection that we have in the population down. In particular, the people who are most important are the people who now have symptoms that might be COVID, the people who might have had a test or are waiting for a test or are waiting for a test result, or anybody who's positive with COVID. These are the people either with the illness or most likely to have the illness. We have somewhere in the region of about 15,000 cases in the last 2 weeks of people with the infection. They simply must self-isolate. They must stay at home, stay in their own room if they live with other people. And there are practical measures, detailed guidance available through the HSE and the HSE website for how to manage yourself in that environment. We cannot have people who are symptomatic, attending work, attending school and looking after vulnerable people, Brian. We've had too many examples of that, and that's all assisted in the spread of this.
And if we do all of that and abide by these restrictions and follow the advice of the public health experts, how will we measure whether or not that is delivering in terms of bringing the numbers down? What are the key numbers that people will be looking at to say, yes, this is working?
Well, we'll be looking at these measures every day as we do, continually. We'll be reporting on them every evening, and we'll be giving advice to government through the Minister of Health every week in relation to this as we progress through these 6 weeks. And it will be the usual, the number of cases that we have each day. We track the 14-day incidence, in other words, the total number of cases over the last fortnight per 100,000 of the population. We look at the positivity rate, in other words, of all of the tests being done, how many of them are positive. We look at the number of people being admitted to hospital. We're now up to 315 people in hospital with this illness. We look at the number of people who have been admitted to intensive care. That's increased to 34, with an extra 5 in the last 24 hours. All of these metrics go together, and they're all set out in the government plan. These are the things that we track, and we need to get down to a radically lower level in respect of all of those than we either have now or that we're at risk of seeing in the coming weeks.
So, for example, if the R number, this reproduction number we've been hearing a lot about, if that's brought down to 0.5, for example, by the beginning of December, by the end of this six-week period, that'll be, I think, 50 to 100 cases a day. Would that mean that we had achieved what you have set out to achieve with your recommendation?
If we were down at less than 100 cases a day, absolutely we would achieve what we're setting out to achieve. We would achieve the protection of the public health that we're now looking for, that's now at risk. We would have protected the school and education services, protected vulnerable people, both medically and socially from this illness, and protected the health service in particular for people who are waiting for operations, waiting for appointments, waiting for services in hospitals. These are the things that we're really trying to protect. And the level of infection in the population at the moment represents a risk to all of those. If we as a society can get to a level of behaviour now that brings that R value down as low as possible, we got this to somewhere in the region of 0.5 in the spring. Mm. If we can do that again, we will get down to those case numbers within that time period.
Well, let me come to what happens then if we do get to that point. But we're obviously, in terms of the numbers, in a much worse situation than was the case 2 weeks ago when you made this original level 5 recommendation. Have we squandered? Has the government's, at that point, decision not to take your recommendation, did that squander valuable time? Did we really lose an opportunity there?
We know we have a burden of infection now which is increasing at a level that we can't regard as being in control, and that's why we have to take the measures that we have at the moment, and the focus now has to be on everybody responding to the decision the government has made by accepting each one of us our individual responsibility. If we're cases, to self-isolate. If we're known contacts, if you live with somebody who's a case, restrict your movements, do not go to school, do not go to work for the period of 14 days. Mm. And that's the clear advice that we want to give to cases and contacts. They're the most important people among the population to encourage in terms of the appropriate behaviour, because they're the ones who either have the infection or are at the highest risk of having the infection. And then for all the rest of us in society is to restrict our movements in line with all of the advice that's now in place. Stay at home if you can work from home. Avoid all kinds of discretionary activity, and all of the decisions that government has made is in support of that. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to do as a society if we are to break the what are now very well established chains of transmission. In other words, the level of infection that is out there in the community.
So if we can get the numbers then down to the sort of levels you've been talking about there by the beginning of December, presumably we can move back to some less restrictive level of restriction. But what then? Will the numbers inevitably begin to climb again?
So what we will do is as a society, we'll continue to track this. If we can get as low as we can as a society, the lower we get, the longer we'll get in terms of benefit out of that. If we don't get low enough, the risk is that as we ease restrictions, the case numbers could go back up again very quickly. But if we get down to lower levels, we'll get a substantial period of time out of that. And obviously there are things that are happening that'll give us encouragement and belief, because there is hope. There is hope that we might see vaccines. This is not a certainty. Mm-hmm. But at some point in the future, this may be something that we can consider as part of our planning. That we will continue to monitor this. We will ensure that our public health system, which is our, not just the testing and tracing, but all aspects of this, people responding to symptoms that they have quickly, attending their GP, getting tested quickly, getting results quickly, mm. and then most important of all, following the advice when they are cases and they've been told that they're cases, to isolate themselves in their houses, and for the people who live with them, yeah. who are close contacts and other close contacts, to restrict their movements. If we do all of these things, we can push the risk of an escalation of this infection further and further out into the future, and we can limit the size that might get to if we act early.
I'm sorry to cut across you, Dr. Hulland, but does Netflix have a plan for living with COVID that doesn't involve, in effect, rolling lockdowns?
So the plan will be that when it is necessary, we'll make whatever advice is required to intervene. Now, obviously, what we want to intervene with the growth of the infection. We want to maintain the infection in a controlled at a control level, which means keeping the case numbers low, mm-hmm. and within a level. Within our public health departments around the country have done terrific work. You'll see some of the mapping work that they've done in some of the public discussion about cases and that have come in from other countries and how it has spread once one case that was reported yesterday that led to 56 further infections. Yeah, yeah. That's all the work that's done by the public health teams. They generate that intelligence and that allows them to take control actions. And what we really need to be able to do is to spot these infections when they become established at a local level early, take local interventions at a local level that stop that becoming established as community transmission. Those are the measures that are in place in this country. Those will be the measures that will protect us from further surges of infection. That's exactly what's recommended by the WHO. As fast and as comprehensive a public health system to identify, track, trace and isolate our cases and contacts. That has to be our strategy into the future as we await a vaccine.
A couple of specifics. Are you asking older people to cocoon on this occasion?
That's all part of the recommendation, yes. It is. And we're asking everybody to stay at home. I mean, the basic message, Brian, for your listeners is to stay at home unless, and there are a limited number of exceptions, if you're part of the essential workforce. Obviously, we have people providing health services, for example. We have people providing education, for example. There'll be people who have to visit elderly people who require support from family members. These are essential things. But all non-essential activity, whether it's social or whether it's work, we're asking people to stay at home other than for those purposes.
You mentioned schools and teachers as an essential service, but the teachers' unions today have been highly critical of what they say are delays in testing and tracing when cases arise in schools. They describe the situation in relation to that as shambolic. Is it good enough that teachers are placed in the front line without, as they see it, a focus on doing everything possible to protect them?
I think the schools and the teachers and the boards of management across the country and the Department of Education have done a terrific job in getting schools established and getting that switched on, as it were, and providing that essential service. We simply have to do everything we can to try and maintain the education of our children, given what was what happened in the earlier part of this year and the amount of education that was missed. We know in terms of the data that we see in terms of incidents in the children at school ages, that it's lower than we might expect for the population in general. So we're continuing to track that. I've heard some of the commentary that you've said. I think that the scale of testing, of contact tracing that's happening in the country at the moment is unprecedented. It is at an enormous scale, and I'm certain that the engagement that the Department of Education is having with the unions will help to explain and for people to understand exactly what has taken place and what is in place to protect children. We will do everything we can to try and ensure we continue to protect the provision of schools in line with both international advice from the WHO and in line with what we're seeing in terms of the burden of disease in that age of the population. And we can see, as I say, it is lower than you might expect.
Okay, just a couple of quick final questions, if I might. Elite sports, the JA Championship, for example, will continue. Why are those events being allowed to continue when so many others are banned?
So we gave some specific consideration to that, and that's part of the guidance that we provided from an effort point of view. We have listened and we have looked at some of the things that happened in the first part of the experience in this country with the pandemic. The significant challenge in terms of mental health and isolation for individuals, and we thought that for some of these kinds of activities could go a long way to giving people something to look forward to. And so some of those activities, which involve, in relative terms, small numbers of people, they're well planned and well organised and controlled. The sporting organisations have done a terrific job in organising themselves to provide some of those activities for the elite sports persons in full compliance with sensible international guidance. And so those are the reasons we think it's important to try to preserve some of that kind of activity to give us all something to look forward to.
Well, I suppose not everyone finds their release in sport, and people might wonder, why can't church attendance be continued to be allowed, where again it's done in a very controlled way with social distancing and risk reduced to a minimum?
Because that will involve direct contact with people, and what we want to try to do, the virus ultimately needs two people to come into sufficiently close contact with one another, in ideally an indoor environment, for it to pass from one person to the next. And we want to minimise the number of those contacts that take place in the population, particularly now over the next 6 weeks. The more we can minimise our interaction with other people, the more we minimise the risk of us becoming infected, or if we have an infection, passing that on to somebody else. So that's the reason behind it. It's not that we're taking a value judgment about any particular activity and saying that we don't value this, we don't want it. These are all things that we don't want to have to be doing or recommending. The sole reason for doing so is to try to protect public health, protect vital public services like education and health services for non-COVID, and to protect people in particular who are vulnerable to the severe effects of this particular infection.
And just finally, Tony Houlihan, relations between NPHET and the government, are you back on the same page now?
I think we've always been on the same page. I mean, this is not easy stuff for anybody, and it's challenging to find ourselves as public health officials recommending some of the really onerous things we're now asking society to do, and for the second time. This is going to be a challenge that will be felt by all of us in society in different ways. But we're confident that if we can follow the public health advice, if we can follow in the way that we did in the early part of this year, and drive that reproductive number that you asked me about down to 0.5, that we can get there within the time period that we have identified.
And just finally, if I might, visors versus face masks. Are visors an effective protection? Should they be really taken out of the picture?
In a word, no. There are settings in which they can be used, and they're often used in clinical settings as an adjunct to a face covering or a mask that a doctor or nurse or health professional would use for splash protection. But I've seen in my own personal experience their widespread use in hospitality and other settings. They're not appropriate. They do not provide the kind of protection that a face covering will provide.
Dr. Tony Houlihan, Chief Medical Officer, thank you for talking to us on the News at One this lunchtime.